I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, okay.
Are you familiar with the term virtue signalling?
Yeah, like when someone's up on the soapbox.
Sort of up on the soapbox. Well, somebody, you know, supports women and LGBT rights, but makes
somebody
sure
supports
that,
women. Why would you do that?
But someone who makes sure that everybody knows.
It's not the supporting that is the virtue signalling. It's the
Making sure everybody knows.
It's similar to a humble brag.
It is. It's very annoying. My friend Lucy Porter, who's a well-known
comedian.
You can
be like, she's a massive virtue signaler. What?
No, she's a comedian. She says it's really hard to define virtue signalling, as I was saying the other day to some of my Muslim friends over a fair trade coffee in our local feminist bookshop.
That's funny.
She's a funny girl. Funny girl. Are we ready to start?
Yeah.
Ruth, we had a lot of emails this week wishing you, I mean, I know you'll be very ungracious about this, but a lot of emails, so a lot from my cronies wishing
you... To be honest, though, a lot from my cronies, but I would say 96%.
Well, no, I think
the people who email.
The people who email. But anyway, some of my
cronies... They've got a lot of time on their hands.
The people... You're implying that my friends and listeners have a lot of time on their hands.
I'm implying that they all are self-employed. They work from home.
Could be. Anyway, a lot of them have very nicely written in and wished you a very happy 18th birthday. What are you looking forward to now that you're 18 years old?
Basically, I'm doing all the same things that I've been doing for
a couple of years.
Since I was about 15 or whatever. But now I can do them without the guilt. So lack of guilt, I would say.
I never noticed, when you'd had an alcoholic drink, say when you were 17 or 16, I never noticed a whole lot of guilt. So you can drink legally, fine.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I can get married without your permission.
Well, I know that. You could join the armed forces.
Yeah.
But I think you can do that at 17.
Yeah, I think you can do that at 17.
Yeah, I think you can. So you can do all that.
I don't think there's anything...
So your life's not changed in any way.
Actually, other than the copious amounts of alcohol I'm excited to drink legally.
Well, I'm not.
Other than the binge drinking, which apparently I won't be doing that much of anyway, because
Good. Us
Gen Zers are...
You're not into it, no.
What's the word when you're, like, really, like, clean and, like, you believe in, like, what's right and stuff? What's the word?
Virtuous.
Apparently us Gen Zers are very virtuous. On this week's segment of Ruth Forgets Words and We Have to Stop Rages. But I am excited to vote.
You get to vote.
I get to vote.
No election at the moment to vote for.
No, but I'll be voting Labour.
Will you be voting Labour now? Have you?
Well, in the generals, I will.
Well,
in the local election.
Considered this, or are you just thinking, well, I'm a young person, therefore it's the law, I should vote
no,
Labour?
No, I mean, first of all, you and Mum generally vote Labour. Well, Mum always votes Labour. You pretty much always vote Labour, apart from when you vote Green because you like to be quirky. And also... Some of you might not have heard, the North is quite the Labour stronghold.
Well, I won't be voting Labour while Jeremy Corbyn is leader. I have voted Labour
because you think he's you say he's anti-Semitic, don't you?
I'm not absolutely sure about that. I don't think he's anti-Semitic. I just think he's useless. So that's why I wouldn't.
I
think he's useless. I think he's pointless, and I think he's a little bit devious as well.
Who would you vote for now, though? Because you wouldn't vote Conservative.
No, I, well...
You wouldn't vote Lib Dem either, would you?
Yeah, I would vote. I've voted Lib Dem in the past,
have
to
you?
Be honest. Yeah, I would vote Lib Dem.
So on the fence.
I'd vote Green. Yeah, well, I'm on the fence. I'd wait to see. I'd also vote on for our local candidate. See, I would vote for Mary Cray, who's our MP.
We like Mary Cray a lot.
I think she's a good local MP. But I just judge it like that, rather than saying, well, hang on, I'm an old person, I better vote Conservative.
This is the thing, because we come from somewhere where literally... Labour would always get in. There's no way that they wouldn't. So then, I guess, what's the point? But then you should vote.
Yeah.
Always vote. Maybe spoil the ballot. Maybe that's the best idea.
I often feel, you know, what's the point? Especially, you know, if you live in a solidly Labour area or solidly Conservative area.
Not that I'm upset about, like, I'd much prefer our area to be solidly Labour than Conservative. That must be really frustrating. If you live in a solidly Conservative place.
Yeah, possibly. Well, but I mean, it's also, if you're a Conservative in a solidly Labour place, it must be disappointing as well. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
but at the moment, I'm supporting Theresa May in coming to a deal on Brexit, because I've always felt that that is...
Because you want them to stop talking about it.
I want it to just be over, yeah.
But
anyway, so
actually,
you're looking forward to voting anyway.
I am looking forward to voting.
Even if it's pointless, it gives you a sense of empowerment.
It's also not pointless, like... You think it's pointless, but it's not.
Well, it is pointless for you in that you know that the next day, if you looked at the figures, you'll see that the next day Mary Cray, your local MP, will have a majority of something like 12,000. And say, so her majority will be 12,493. And then when you hear this announced, you think, without me, it would have only been 12,493.
Yeah, but you could say that about every single person who votes, but, you know, it's like together you make a big difference.
Possibly.
That's why it's important to vote. Get out there and vote.
And it's been the American midterms, as we
yes.
know.
Yes, so been hearing a lot about
voting. I was watching all the celebrities on Instagram. Well, yeah, and some of the celebrities didn't actually have that much effect. The candidate in Tennessee, and I forgot the name of the candidate, but the candidate in Tennessee that Taylor Swift was backing.
Yeah, Taylor Swift.
She came out at a late stage, and everybody thought Taylor Swift could swing the election there. Well, she didn't quite. The candidate did fairly well for Tennessee, but didn't get in.
Taylor Swift, who famously is very quiet on, well, was always really quiet on politics, and Donald Trump has managed to even make Taylor Swift speak out.
Yeah, well, a lot of people spoke out. I mean, there was an anti-Trump vote in various, mostly in what they're calling suburban areas of large cities. So sort of suburban Detroit, suburban New York, and all those places. There was a lot of anti-Trump voting there. The candidate, though, the great hope for the Democrats, the candidate in Texas, Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, who's been endorsed by one of Destiny's Child, Kelly or Michelle. Not Beyonce, though, sir.
No, anyway, Kelly Rowland.
I think.
Didn't manage to swing the election. Because Beto O'Rourke, who they were thinking of as a sort of possible presidential candidate,
he's very like, I think if he ran somewhere else, he'd probably win, wouldn't he? But Texas is
very Republican, yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
So he still did well.
He did well. He didn't get in, though. He didn't overcome Ted Cruz, who's quite a powerful Republican and was one of their presidential candidates last time.
Yeah. Who are the Democrats? Who's their big gun?
They haven't got a big gun. And that means, you know, when you look at the 2020 election, at the moment, nobody's emerged that's going to challenge Donald Trump.
I
was watching it on the TV, and there are loads of, way more women than ever before have got in on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
Probably of all the names mentioned, Oprah is the one Democrat that would get in. Because
Martin Sheen, I reckon, would get in as well.
He's already done the job.
Yeah, exactly. Computer. He's very good at it. But he's got that presidential air.
Yeah, well, of course, it is fiction.
But he does have it anyway, doesn't he? Because that's why they cast him. How does it work? Because they say they've lost the House.
There's two houses.
They've lost the House. Where's he living?
There's the House of Representatives. That's the one that has now turned Democrat. It was Republican. It's now narrowly Democrat. And then there's Congress, which is the upper house, and that is still Republican.
I kind of do know some of this. From the West Wing, because in part of the West Wing they have a Republican House, but the Democrats, a Democrat president, and there's a lot of problems with, like, they can never get any bills passed, and so they kind of can't do anything.
I think there's going to be a few of those sort of problems. And also because the House,
which is good, I guess,
the House of Representatives is now Democrat, there are chances that some of these inquiries about Trump's tax affairs, about Russian interference in the election, some of those inquiries might be pushed through by the House of Representatives, which is now Democrat.
Yeah.
So it's a volatile time. But the message I get from seeing all these analysts on the TV is that America is really divided. It's very polarized.
Oh, God,
wrong,
yeah.
Like we are here. But
I mean, not to the same extent, though, just because if you've... Something we've not mentioned in a long time is The Handmaid's Tale.
No.
I guess that if you've read that, you will see, like, the more you look at America, the more you're like, wow, this is really scary. America's really religious. Do you know what I mean? And really that, like, religious right, the Puritan... Right. Mm. That's, you know what? Puritan's the word I was thinking when I was thinking of virtuous earlier.
Yeah, Puritan. It's not Puritan, though, I don't think.
America?
No, Puritan. Yeah, I agree with
America.
You.
America. You see more and more how, just how, like, scarily kind of right-wing.
No, it's always been,
like,
the way. Censorship in America has always been anything to do with sex, really censored, very, very... But
because
violence,
the church has such...
Fine, we're all, you know, we're fine
The church
that.
Has such a stronghold over places. And I mean, if you've seen... Spotlight as well. I mean, I know that's set quite far in the past, but I still think a lot of the stuff that it says, Spotlight is about the Boston Globe, who covered the paedophilia ring in the Catholic Church, and a lot of it is just like they never talk about it enough because the church is still so powerful. The same it was in like Ireland in the 60s or whatever, you know, and if you've seen Philomena as well.
Now, this concept of YouTubers, which every week we talk to some extent about YouTubers.
And the internet and stuff,
Now, the YouTubers, because there's one on Joe Sugg on Strictly Come Dancing.
Now, who actually is quite a nice guy, I think, and he's not quite as capitalist as his older sister, who is.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you. His sister is Zoe Sugg.
Zoella.
Right.
I mean, her name is Zoe Sugg.
Well,
but yeah.
Zoella, which is what she calls herself on YouTube, has got a book out for Christmas. You'll be delighted to hear.
Oh,
Who hasn't got a book
out?
Stop
the
Christmas
shopping now.
Yeah, well, it's £20, and it's a self-help guide, which includes advice on taking a walk and how to make a sandwich. According to this story in the Sun newspaper, she gives millennials tips. So it's assuming that it's only millennials going to read this book, and probably Generation Z.
This is the problem. They use millennials in just the... Like, what are they on about millennials? Well, no millennials will be reading this book. Millennials are like 24, do you know what I mean? Yeah. 24 and upwards. They're not
so
going to be reading it.
This book is going to be 15-year-olds.
Younger than me. This is like... Yeah, no, it's like 13-year-olds. It's people 10 to 14, I would say.
Well, I'll read you...
Madness.
Madness. I'll read you what it says here. The 28-year-old sister of Strictly Come Dancing star Jo promises, quote, simple but impressive DIYs. So the book is how to do things yourself, right? Mm. The book includes tips on how to butter bread for sandwiches, as well as taking a coat for a winter walk.
And if you're 10 years old, you probably don't know how to butter bread.
And an umbrella in spring. Yeah, but you could work it out, even if you were 10. You could see the butter dish there and a knife. If you gave a 10-year-old butter dish, a knife and a piece of bread, I don't reckon they'd just be staring at it, thinking, what the hell, what next?
There's tons of 10-year-old children across the country who were just stood in blind fear looking at a slice of bread, knife in hand.
Yeah, well, she'll tell them how
just
to butter it.
Just wondering.
Yeah. So it's how to butter bread for sandwiches and take a coat if you go for a walk in the winter. She also recommends eating chocolate at Easter, playing Monopoly as a board game. I think the Sun is probably...
Probably not as bad as it sounds.
No.
But you can't... She's 28 years old and she's still making the same videos as she was when she was like... Oh, no, I never liked her.
No.
But, like, I don't have the same...
But you used to look at her stuff, didn't you? When you were young, a couple of years ago. Did you used to...
Not really. I've never watched any of her videos.
And she's a huge star,
makeup
isn't she? When she signs the book in a shop, there will be thousands of... You know, if she went tomorrow to the White Rose Centre or the Trafford Centre and she's signing a book... There'll be security. You won't be able to get anyone.
Oh, no, of course not. You'd have to book tickets. It'd be ticketed. Because she wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
But can you imagine still being, like, fulfilled by the same thing as you were 8 years ago?
So you think she's...
I think she's been around for... Oh, I think she must be empty inside. Surely.
Really?
You can't not be, can you? If you're still... You're not the same person as you were 7 years ago. I don't know how long she's been on YouTube.
But she's doing the same sort of stuff then, is she?
Yeah. Well, as far as I know, yeah.
Readers, says The Sun, slammed the 256 pages of idiotic hints as a complete waste of money. One wrote online, all the ideas in this book can easily be found online for free, which I suppose you're right.
That's the same with any recipe book.
So what about YouTubers? Zoe Allen decided is just the same old nonsense and it's not for you. YouTubers doing stuff for you?
Well, there's a girl called Arden Rose. She makes like videos. She's quite like hipster, like artsy. She makes videos about like fashion and stuff.
Right.
It's more adult content. Like she'll do videos about like the environment and like sustainable fashion, and then she'll do videos about sex and like relationships, or she'll do videos that are more...
So what's she called?
Arden Rose. And she does more... Or she'll do like little fit, like short films and stuff. It's got like a creative journey. It's not just like, here's me putting on my makeup.
I wonder how they suddenly sort of catch on YouTubers.
Yeah, no. It's weird, isn't it?
It's the way to make a fortune, isn't it?
Oh, my God, yeah. But then again, I've seen people on Twitter and stuff who like do YouTube about saying how difficult it is to actually make money. Like, even if you've got tons of subscribers, you get kind of done over by brands and stuff.
You know, it's no good having hundreds of thousands. You've got to have
millions. On YouTube, again, not something I actually do watch, but something that I wondered whether you knew what it was. Mukbangs.
Mukbangs? No, I've no idea. And now I'm assuming... How do you spell it?
Mukbang.
Mukbang.
Yeah, but you don't really say it like that. So it comes from... The word comes from mukda, which is spelled muk-da, which is the Korean word for eating, with bangsong, the Korean for broadcast. So basically, they're these videos, and it'll usually be just one person, and they'll have a table full of loads and loads of food, and they'll just eat food live on camera.
And people watch it.
Not live, like, taped. Again, people love to watch it.
And what are they eating? Anything particular?
Just anything, really. Usually it's more of a... Sometimes it's Korean food, but they also do it with, like, burgers and stuff. Usually it's, like... lots of different types of food, so you'll have like burgers, fries, onion rings,
and there's no commentary on it. They just eat
no. They kind of are like, "Oh, this is nice" and stuff like that, but it's not like they chat about other stuff.
Is that all they say?
No, I mean they say stuff, but not really. And so a lot of people are like, is loneliness the reason that people love watching these videos so much? Because they're massive. It's absolutely huge.
Really?
So if you look,
where do they come from? From America? From the UK?
America more so. They've got like loads and loads of views, like. Stephanie Sue, who I don't know whether she's famous for it, but this is the first one that comes up when you go on YouTube, it's only been up for 12 hours. It's already got 60,000 views. Sometimes there's a group of them. One that was up 2 days ago has got
137
views.
It's literally watching people eating.
Yeah. This one, What I Eat on My Period, mukbang, 2.4 million views.
Wow.
Sometimes if it's with someone else, they'll like chat about stuff that is interesting to you while they're eating. It's kind of like going for dinner with someone.
You know, I'm just wondering, there's this new programme on BBC, which I watched a bit of last night, absolutely abysmal programme, called I'll Get This. And basically the whole idea of the programme is they get five celebrities. I think I had to ask you who these celebrities were.
All five of them.
I know who Carol Vorderman is. But they also had Rylan, and they had Ed Gamble, and they had Ellis James, and they had people I'd never heard of. But anyway, they get these five celebs, and they sit around a table, and they play sort of parlour games. So they play little games. They have cards that were games.
Parlour topics.
Yeah, they have these. And they sit around, and as far as I watched 5 minutes of it, I couldn't take any more. So they sit around and then they play stupid games, and at the end of it, whoever's lost the most or won the most, I don't know how the hell it works, gets to pay for the meal. That's what it's called, I'll Get This. Like, as if it matters, they're celebrities, they've got millions of pounds. Why would it matter who? But, you know, there's no jeopardy there at all. Who gives a shit?
No, I think it's this idea of just boring programs.
Do you think they've taken that off mukbang? Do you think they've taken the idea and said, hey, look, people like looking at people eating. Let's use it.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know whether this is too, like, psychoanalytical and I'm digging too deep.
Dig.
But is it because we live in, like, a tumultuous world where there's a lot of pressure? You were saying so polarising, America, here? Do people like watching... So another set of YouTubers who... Loads and loads of people who watch girls, especially, who are like in my year, called Sophia and Cinzia. Just two girls, they're best friends, they're from Nottingham. They basically just talk about whatever you would imagine you would talk about. Do you know what I mean? Just stupid stuff. And they show themselves doing their makeup or chatting while they're eating pancakes. Like, they're not that interesting. There's nothing that happens in them. But we like watching people who feel like friends.
This is very futuristic, isn't it? Is it because
we live in a world where we feel so out of control that we like to just see people being boring because it makes us feel there's consistency in the world? I think that's what people like about Sophia and Cinzia, who are there. They had like barely any subscribers.
Sophia and Cinzia.
I don't watch their videos religiously, but sometimes if me and one of my friends are doing our makeup before like a night out or something, we'll put them on. And I think it's because the consistency of their friendship is grounding. And maybe that's why people like... We talked about the nice shows. That's why people like Bake Off, because it gives you... grounding in a world that's lacking stability.
Well, I can see the appeal of Bake Off and even things like X Factor and The Apprentice. I can see the appeal of that.
I cannot see the appeal of X Factor.
Well,
so boring.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, X Factor's sort of a bit over, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, isn't it?
But things like Bake Off and Apprentice and Strictly Come Dancing, I can see the appeal because there is jeopardy there, and you know that, you know, there's a possibility that people you like might get kicked out, or people you don't like might stay in.
Yeah.
There's all that. So I can see the appeal of that. It's a contest. I mean, it's why.
Yeah, but
that's why I go to football matches, you know.
But I think that the reason people like Bake Off so much is because it doesn't feel like a contest. Like,
no,
because all the contests,
yeah.
Because the contestants like each other so much, it doesn't feel like a contest the way that X Factor does. And I think that's why X Factor has slowly drifted off, because people like the friendships in Bake Off. Mm-hmm. Same as they like the friendships in The Apprentice. You know, when we see them at the house or something and they're joking around, those bits, the bits where you're like, wow, they're really actually human. It's why people like Apprentice You're Fired, because they come out and you're like, oh, they're not a massive dickhead. Nice to know.
Let's have a short break for a commercial for another podcast or a product that we approve of.
We like
100,
it.
100. Oh, got to be like.
Unless
it.
It's something really awful.
No, they don't advertise awful things on our
podcast. Because I don't want to be advertising. I don't know what.
No, they're not advertising weapons or anything like that.
I don't want to have my face on a gun.
Your face will not be on a gun, I guarantee you. It will be a fine product or a fine podcast, and we'll just leave a short break for that.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's do the music now, Ruth.
Yes, let's.
Well, I was startled, a little shocked, when we were in the car and you got your aux lead, so you can play your own music in the car and we don't have to listen to the radio. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes the Bee Gees and How Deep Is Your Love.
It's the best song ever written.
And you say, it's the best song ever written.
It is.
But, well, it's not. I can think of 100 songs.
Objectively, the best song ever written. I will go to the grave saying, best song ever written.
Well, and I was shocked because I can think of at least 50 songs that are better.
They're not, though.
Than How Deep Is Your Love.
I just think it's the best song ever. Mm.
Well, what I've decided to do for you this week then, to sort of pander to your love of all things Bee Gee, is to play Andy Gibb. Now,
don't know it. Don't know any other Bee Gee songs. Well, just the best one.
But well, you know the other Bee Gee songs. You know all this stuff from Saturday Night Fever and all that.
Did they do Saturday Night Fever?
Yes, they did.
Genuinely
night
didn't.
Night Fever, night, that one, and Stayin' Alive, Stayin' Alive.
Oh!
Yeah.
Get you, Bee Gees.
Yeah, you love the Bee Gees. It was Barry, Robin and Maurice Gibb were the Bee Gees. I've always threatened on the little write-ups for this is that you're going to share with me the thoughts of a teenage girl and I'll tell you who the Bee Gees were. So this is now...
This is it. This is the last episode.
This is where I tell you who the Bee Gees were. Well, they were Barry, Robin and Maurice Gibb. They were Manchester lads. Their family went to Australia. And they started going for talent contests in Australia. Mm. And they became, you know, mildly famous as youngsters. You know, there are lots of clips on YouTube of them on TV in Australia when they were young. They moved back here. But when they'd gone to Australia, they had a younger brother, Andy, who's quite a bit younger than the other Bee Gees. And he was like a few months old when they moved to Australia, and they were still a young teen when they moved back here. And then they were so prolific in writing songs, because as we know, they've written songs for Barbara Streisand and all sorts of people.
Yeah.
They decided their kid brother, they'd write songs for him, and he was better looking than the other. The other Bee Gees were never what you they were never thought of as being
pop stars.
Hot, you know, yeah. Hot pop stars. They're pop stars, but
hot.
They were not hot pop stars. But he was. He was very good looking. You know, he had blonde hair and everything, and he was good.
What a pop star should look like.
Precisely. Anyway, the song, we'll play the song, and this was, he had about two or three hits. There's a bit of a tragedy to do with Andy Gibb, but he had a few hits which were written for him by his elder brothers, and this was the biggest.
This love will shine, girl, watch it and see.
Well, there you are, getting in touch with your inner Bee Gee.
I like it a lot.
Very brief success for Andy Gibb. He was addicted, heavily addicted to drugs. He suffered from depression and died just 5 days after his 30th birthday.
It's really sad.
So it was a sad story.
So mine this week, not got quite as long a preamble as you have, is by Rena...
What are you saying?
Well, I mean, I wondered whether we were ever going to get to hear the song, but whatever. Mine is called Cyber Stockholm Syndrome, and it's by Rena Sawayama.
And catchy, Cyber Stockholm Syndrome.
It's just pop, Dev.
It's
just pop.
Pop. It's not a
good
big
pop
jump.
There.
Yes, good pop. It's not a big jump from Andy Gibb to that.
It's not actually at all. So Rena Sawayama is a Japanese-born singer-songwriter, and she's done some modelling as well. She was born in Japan, but she was raised from a young age in London. She released her debut mini-album called Rena in 2017, and that's her most famous song, but it's still not played on the charts. Really, but she's kind of been hailed as a sort of the next Lady Gaga, the next Katy Perry. Like, I think that a lot of people think she's going to be really big. Vogue talked about her being like the millennial take on 1990s era pop.
And do you know what Stockholm Syndrome is?
Yeah, when you fall in love with the person who's kidnapped you.
That's right. And this has obviously happened online, so it's Cyber Stockholm Syndrome.
That's why it's a millennial tape, because the lyrics are slightly darker, but the tune is still like happy-go-lucky.
Should we read some of these emails? Got a lot of emails this
week.
Yeah,
go on then.
Okay, well, Darren Leithley says, I'm not sure where I fit on the target demographic.
Everyone says this.
I'm 41 with daughters aged 7 and 2. He says, I've been catching up with back episodes. A lot of people, that's the thing about podcasts, people, you know, we're topical. We're talking about the American midterms and people are probably hearing about 3 or 4 weeks' time, but it's still relevant. Anyway, he says, I'm catching up with episodes. I'm on holiday in northwest Spain. Very nice. He says, as a Tyke exile in Dublin, it's great hearing my local accent.
Yeah.
He says,
Ruth.
He says, Ruth, I'm completely fed up with Brexit, but unfortunately it affects me a great deal because obviously...
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, it would do it. Yeah, you must be kind of in limbo.
Mark Ridley says, hi, Martin and Ruth. I'd be very interested in your views on this. I'm 56 years of age, and in the summer took my mother to London to watch a day's test cricket for her 80th birthday.
Oh, God, I can't imagine why.
On the, I suspect the reason is they like cricket.
Why, though? I don't get it.
Well, some people like cricket.
Yeah.
I'm sort of okay. I'm neutral on cricket, but I can watch it. On the way back on the Underground, a gentleman offered my mother a seat, which she accepted. She's 80 years old. A young woman of about 25 then offered me her seat. Oh, it's such a bad moment. The moment when somebody
It's a bad moment, but also, though, sometimes people get proper arsey with you, and you're just like, well, then I won't offer you my seat. Do you know what I mean? It's not an insult, but just like, you play it safe, don't you, that you should offer someone your seat. Especially when you get on the bus, on the train, and like you're all college students, even if they look about 40, you still be like, oh, do you want to sit down?
Well, because you're
younger, like,
you're a polite person and you've been well brought up, I hope.
But not everyone, do you know what I mean? Don't get arsy about people. Do people?
I know.
Pees me off. It's like, what do you want? You can't have it all.
Anyway, young woman of about 25. Then offer. Yeah. What do you want, older people? You've got university grants. You've got houses.
You've got affordable housing. I'm renting my whole life. I just want to give you my seat.
Paul Colling has got in touch with us on the subject of Palmos.
Oh, God, I've completely forgotten about Palmos. Yeah.
Well, he says that's the point. People listen to the old episodes. He says.
Oh. Palmer's is a Newcastle thing?
It's a Middlesbrough thing.
Middlesbrough.
Little Teesside thing. It's a chicken with Parmesan cheese and it's all deep fried and it's got...
Sounds glorious.
12 million
calories. Yeah, 12,000 calories.
Anyway, he said he's been in the forces. He says, before I joined the forces, I lived in a town called Redcar, where the Palmos are amazing. Did you know they do a pork Palmo also? These are a lot harder to find, but they taste even better. The Palmo is very easy to make and tastes so good. I live in Fleet now. Fleet's in Hampshire, so he's moved down south. But I make them. He says, I actually make Palmos for all my friends. They love them. He says, after watching the Invictus Games, I've decided to apply to compete in the powerlifting events. So if I qualify, I'll be your first Invictus listener. Steve says, a belated happy 18th birthday, Ruth.
Thank you.
And as someone who, when I was 18...
Yeah, still accepting any gifts to my PO box.
Yes, thought I'd never be old. He says, unfortunately, I'm now a grumpy 62 years.
Yeah, you feel invincible at 18.
You do. So be warned, he says, he's now become 62, mysteriously. He says, my issue is, I come from a time well before The Simpsons, who I really don't find funny.
No!
I've never met anyone who doesn't find The Simpsons funny. But he doesn't.
It's ridiculous. He's clearly not watching it right.
Yeah.
He must be stupid.
He's having a go at...
I can't think of any other explanation.
Steve... you're not watching it right, apparently.
Thank you for the birthday wishes.
And he also says, the world's going crazy with political correctness. You just can't be funny anymore, he says. And I think that's why so many modern sitcoms just aren't remotely funny. And I've put in brackets here, Ruth's response to this would be, blah, 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 Fawlty Towers, blah, blah.
It was in the Dolly Alderton book, and she was like, she spends every day just watching Fawlty Towers. It's only got 12, and in hushed tones of the dinner table, my other friend said to me, it's only got 12 episodes. I just don't know how she gets the mileage.
It's true. You sort of live with it. 12 episodes and then it was gone. Just leave them wanting more, though. And Steve says he also hates Facebook, the Kardashians, Big Brother, fake celebrity, etc., etc., but not including Strictly, which he says he does love. Strictly is the one that sort of appeals to all generations. David Sharrett, who's a regular emailer, says, happy belated birthday, Ruth.
Thank you.
If I may say so, I feel your podcasts are getting better and better. They're evolving and growing in confidence with you, Ruth. Funny and fascinating in equal measure.
Aww, thanks.
He's suggested
I won't be able to get the headphones on next week. My head will be so big.
Here was an interesting piece that I read in the Times, Ruth, and this is to do with misogyny as a hate crime. They're talking about taking it off the, basically, so that police can concentrate more on core values, you know, as in solving crime, catching burglars, all that sort of stuff. Sarah Thornton, who was chairwoman of the National Police Chiefs Council, says that it would one way to improve performance would be to exclude misogynist abuse from the hate crimes law. So misogynist abuse would be taken out of the hate crimes law. The columnist in the Times says it's ridiculous that you should never do that. She says misogyny underpins most violent crime. It's Heather Brooke who's
really Yeah, that's the thing.
Misogyny underpins most violent crime, from sexual grooming to domestic violence, sexual assault, rape and murder. No one is calling for race, religion or disability to be removed from the list of hate crimes. Now, I'm assuming this is something you would agree with. I think I agree with it myself, honest.
How can you...
I think if you're going to have misogyny, hate crimes...
Yeah, it underpins so many crimes. Like, I saw a really interesting statistic, which I wish I could remember, but I can't. So I'm just going to make it up. And
well, if you can give me approximate. You don't give
approximate.
Me any
statistics. So basically, it was saying about how way more men talk about how they got out of... sort of abusive relationships than women, which is really surprising because so many more women have been in abusive relationships. And someone just commented being like, oh yeah, it's because more women die in abusive relationships. That how would they even take it off? You can't just take it. Well, what, would you be like, it's not a hate crime anymore to be misogynistic? Like,
well,
it's okay.
They're not saying it's okay. What they're saying is it's taken... Because I think probably from a practical point of view, I'm just looking at this, she's the chairwoman of the National Police Chiefs Council. So I think what she's saying from a practical point of view...
I get that.
If you say misogyny is a hate crime, virtually, you know, wolf whistling, for instance, you know, at that very lower level, that... investigating that as a hate crime, whereas the other hate crimes like race, I can see both sides of the guy. I see the practical side of it, which is it's quite difficult to prosecute misogyny.
And also you should be spending time prosecuting people for rape, not prosecuting 14-year-old boys for shouting at girls.
Yeah.
But then again, you can't have it both ways. If you make it not a hate crime anymore, then you're saying it's okay. There's no way for that not to be the thing. You have to... like, I get the practical issues, and she's clearly, like, she's not an idiot. She's thought about it. If you're the police chief, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she'll have thought about it, and maybe practically it is better, but you've got to think of the theory behind it, because it's going to be portrayed that way.
That's more or less what Heather Brooks says in the Times. These issues very much to the fore at the moment, things like misogyny and all that, and obviously... well, they are.
And all that.
You know, all that stuff. The position of women in society is a huge issue at the moment, and there is... And I said this before, and I think you poo-pooed it last time. I'll try you out on again. There's a sort of feminising of the culture going on at the moment, which means that if you listen to... and I'm just getting this from listening to the radio. If you listen to the radio, when we have Capital or Heart on, it is a very sort of feminine music, if you like. Music mostly by...
That's just a trend, though. I don't think that's a feminising of culture.
Yeah.
I get what you mean. I guess, like, you've got sort of, like, the Ghostbusters remake and Doctor Who's becoming a woman and stuff, which I don't agree with Doctor Who being a woman.
Oh,
because,
don't you?
Well, so basically, at first I was like, great, brilliant. Then Kathleen Moran did an article about how Doctor Who is literally the only non-violent, nerdy male role model for young boys, how important that was. And then I was speaking, so I went on this like residential thing. I was speaking to one of the boys who's a big Doctor Who fan.
Yes, you went on a course. We haven't even talked about that.
Oh yeah, but I've not really got anything to say. But I went on this thing, and we were talking about Doctor Who, and he was saying it makes me really sad because I've always loved Doctor Who, but now. And he was like my only male role model that I related to, even though he's fighting aliens.
Mm-hmm.
He's like nerdy and bumbly and weird. And
So you think the character should... Because a lot of people...
I think the character should still be a man, just because men don't have role models like that. What I really want, I don't want us to have to keep adapting stories like Ghostbusters and Oceans...
Yeah,
Ocean's 11. Which turned into Ocean's 8, didn't it? Because apparently you can't get 11 women.
so
I don't want them
to
keep.
Women.
You just can't find them. Where are they? I don't want them to keep having to twist the stories to make them women. Like, I don't want you to keep having to adapt male characters. I just want them to write women, female characters that are strong and powerful, but not so fictional that they're not believable. I want them to be flawed. and them to be strong. Like, I want to grow up seeing that.
Yeah.
I don't want to just see women who are now in men's characters. Like, yeah. I hate that trend.
And a lot of people, I'm not a hooey or whatever they call people who like
Hoovian.
Yes, I'm not a Hoover. So I can't really comment.
I can't really comment
on this. I don't really care. But I've seen a lot of stuff online saying that this series of Doctor Who is not really as good as some of the previous series.
People saying that it's better than the Peter Capaldi one, though.
All right. Well, I heard some people also thought that the bolting on of the political correctness, like the Rosa,
is too much. It was like that Big Little Lies. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was like a thriller, and it was all intrigue and stuff. And then at the end, it had this weird feminist ending tacked on.
Yeah.
Same with The Post. Do you remember The Post?
Oh, yeah, I remember The Post.
The Meryl Streep film about Watergate, and she, and it was a story, and she wasn't a particularly feminist character at all, really. Mm. And then at the end, it had this weird feminist angle tacked on, and it doesn't need it.
No, well, I agree with you. I think they're very sensible. What does worry me, in a way, in terms of the feminising of the culture, is that you'll find things that, that we look at now and think, my God, that was so sexist. And I'm thinking of things like Woody Allen films, I'm thinking of Clint Eastwood movies, I'm thinking of Westerns, but even John Ford going way back to his Westerns, which were very, very male and very sexist, and you wouldn't make them now, not in the sort of current attitudes. You know, you think of Woody Allen playing a leading man at like 52 with with Mariel Hemingway, who was like about 16 at the time.
Yeah.
No way would you make them now.
Yeah, but you probably wouldn't make a film of Lolita anymore.
No.
They probably just wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
So but it doesn't make it a bad film.
Precisely. It means there's a whole, and doesn't make it a bad book. And it means there's a
whole. Oh, no. No one's disputing that it's a bad book at all, are they?
No.
But people get all het up on Lolita.
I mean, actually, some people do dispute it. In fact, it's interesting.
Yeah, some people say it's a bad book. I've not read the book, actually.
I've read the book. It was one of my favourite books a long time ago. But interesting that you used that word Puritan a wee bit earlier, because now, in a way, with the feminists and the Puritans, who were in the 70s absolutely diametrically opposed, and now get closer together when you see something like Lolita, which the Catholic Church banned.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church banned the book Lolita. And now you find feminists who will say that's just the sort of thing that shouldn't be published.
Yeah,
and they're
this
on
the
same
the problem.
Side as the Catholic Church.
You shouldn't sense people. No one should ever feel like they can't write something because it questions.
Well,
that's why I like characters who are women who are really problematic. Do you know what I mean? And
that you're
like, that's not really right, because that's what most women are like.
It's what people are like.
It's what people, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why.
So the only point I was going to make was about, about the Woody Allen films and the Westerns and the heavy rock and all those sort of very male things. Is that it'd be a shame if they disappeared altogether. Do you have a meme?
I do. My top three assumptions when the doorbell rings. Number one, murderer. Number two, police telling me everyone is dead. Number three, that book I ordered about positive thinking.
Very good.
It's
very good,
then,
indeed.
It's that's a tweet, actually. Well, it's a tweet that was on Instagram then.
Well, I'm not bothered where it comes from. It's a good joke.
It's good, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there you go. And my Kardashian news is crap, and I don't even know what's going on, so I'm not going to tell it.
All right, no Kardashian. Well, that will please one or two of the emailers.
Exactly.
One or two of my cronies who don't really want to hear about the Kardashians. And that. So that's.
And there's none of my...
Let's protect the cronies.
None of my rubbish reality shows on at the moment, so you won't hear about any of those.
Well, they're
either.
coming up. I'm a Celebrity, Get
I'm
Me
a Celeb.
Out.
Oh, 18th of November.
Oh, right. I didn't know what date it was, but obviously you're better informed.
I'm excited. I love I'm a Celeb. Although, this year...
Yeah.
Deck and Holly Willoughby, innit?
It's Deck and Holly Willoughby. Well, that'd be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
Well, I think that'll do it for this week, Ruth.
Yes, I think it will.
I think we've done it. So
thank you for listening.
Thank you very much indeed for listening. And we'll have more for you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.